It's time for Twig. This week in Google, we've got yesterday's Google announcement, the Made by Google announcement that we're going to dive into, dissect, pick apart. We even have Duncan Jaffrey from Ozdroid, who was there at the event, joining myself, Stacey Higginbotham, and Jeff Jarvis. We're going to talk about it all coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 373 for Wednesday, October 5th, 2016. The best of Google. This Week in Google is brought to you by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Go to hover.com and use the promo code TWIG at checkout to save 10% off your first purchase. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twig. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. I am super thrilled to join you for the third week and final week. That's the sad part. My name is Jason Howell, filling in for Leo one last time. He returns to live shows here at Twit, I believe this Saturday with the tech guys. So you're going to see him definitely next week on This Week in Google.
Jason, go ahead. Go ahead. Tell the truth. You changed the locks.
So going forward.
He's not getting back in.
No, I have not changed anything. I would not dare do that to Mr. Laporte. Obviously, Jeff Jarvis is here, creator of BuzzMachine.com, professor at the CUNY School of Journalism. How you doing, Jeff?
All right. Good to be here. You've been doing a great job, Jason. Oh, glad to have you here.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that. It's always a lot of fun. Also joining us is Stacey Higginbotham, creator of the IoT Podcast at IoTPodcast.com, Internet of Things newsletter at StaceyOnIoT.com. How are you, Stacey?
So well, and as you guys notice, I am traveling today. There's a drum kit, a microphone, and bookshelves. So enjoy the
play the drums, Stacey. Please.
Oh, I can't, and I'm not allowed to touch them unless I get like basic instruction first. So,
sadly. Piano, you're sitting at? Can you do that?
I am sitting at a piano too. Now that
go ahead.
I could
go
do.
Ahead, play a tune. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Yeah. Hold on.
I think this is essential.
This is way okay. Hold on, you guys. Okay, ready.
The seas go marching in.
I didn't do the chords because I had to hold the lid.
Don't quit your day job, Stacey.
Yeah,
don't worry.
That was amazing.
That was terrible.
But I really want to see you on the drum set before the end of the show. Maybe that can be your thing at the end of the episode is a drum fill. I'll hold
back. That's why I called you. We unplugged, Stacey. We can't hear you.
Oh, really?
Oh, now we can.
There we go. Now you're back.
Oh, that's cruel. Everyone else missed my rendition of...
We heard
it. We got it. No, we made fun of it already. It's all right.
We heard the Saints go marching in, and I probably couldn't play it nearly as well as you did. So,
but I'm hoping that every time Jason makes a joke, you can do a rim shot on the drums.
That would mean that your laptop would have to be set up on like a tom or something in order to pull that off.
Yes, I'm like sitting here thinking, how could I make that happen?
How can it's I not reach going. That symbol?
You just
the
toss
background.
The drumstick behind you. What do you
mean? That'd work the first time.
I'm like, ding.
There we go. All right. That works. Joining us here, so we kind of have a surprise guest here at the table. Duncan Jaffrey is a senior associate at Ozdroid, ozdroid.net. First of all, it's great to get you on the show, Duncan. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jason. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. You reached out to me a couple of weeks ago on Twitter saying that you were going to be in the area. I just did not put two and two together, the fact that you were coming to the area for Ozdroid to cover Google's big hardware event yesterday. And that you're going to be in here at the same time that I'm, helping to host This Week in Google. It's like all things suddenly came together. So my apologies to you because you literally found out like 10 minutes ago that you were doing the show.
No, that's perfectly fine. We kept the purpose of my visit a little under wraps until all the NDAs had dropped. So perfectly fine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ozdroid.net, I'm no stranger. That's no stranger to me anyways. Daniel Tyson's been on All About Android a decent amount of times. He always brings Australian goodies with him, and you also did
Tim
that?
Tim Tams.
The big pack.
The value pack. So if you like Tim Tams, well.
Oh, I do.
Not one, but two. Apparently, this is like jealous. Super value. And yeah, these are really delicious.
They're not bad.
They sell them
at Target during the holidays, just in case. I came back from Australia with a craving for Tim Tams.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, this is the worst. And then Target over Christmas, Tim Tams.
You
just
also,
so you know.
Have you ever had Fantails? Fantails?
I have not.
Last time Dan was here, he brought Minties, which yes. I think are reminiscent of toothpaste. And
yeah.
So it's a toothpaste-based lolly. Whereas these are a far more chocolatey, caramelly thing. And the little hook with these is the wrappers have trivia about different movie stars and so forth on them. So you get a meal and a show, as it were.
All right, you get a little smarter while you're getting that cavity in your tooth.
Another traditional Australian confectionery.
Excellent. Well, chewy caramel with a rich chocolate coating. If it's got chocolate in the name.
And it doesn't have any nougat.
Doesn't have any nougat. All right, so Jeff, Stacy, nougat, how do you pronounce?
I'm from Texas. I'm going to say nougat.
Yeah.
Nougat.
I think we just all do. Hey, there you go. That's a good mashup. So does it sound just strange when we end up saying nougat? Nougat.
Yeah. I mean, speaking to David Burke yesterday, he was very strongly in the nougat camp. So
really?
I think if Mr. Android himself says nougat, I'm going to go with Android.
Well,
with nougat.
Well, the creator of GIFs says Jif, and I refuse to go along. So no.
Yeah, he's
the
wrong.
You've got me on that one,
no
Jif.
Stand.
I mean, you know, I think probably the right authority on this would be Google Now. So I'm going to go ahead and do this. I did this on All About Android. This might drive the point home. What is nougat?
Hopefully I got that. Hold on.
Nougat, a candy made from sugar.
Oh!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nougat. There you go. It's been decided. It's totally the GIF argument all over again.
So the Hillary Clinton campaign, when it put out a press release after the New York Times did the Donald Trump attack story, they said the gig is up. And so I was among many who tweeted and said, no, it's jig, unless you're trying to do a GIF thing here.
It's really not gig? Because if you have a job, it's a gig.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why the gig
economy
is a play on words.
Jig is up. Jig is up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and see, now that you say it, I feel like I've heard both, and I've just never given
it. Is a jig like the sailor's dance? Where did this word come from?
I guess so. I'm not even sure.
Let's see.
We talk about anything on this show.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, etymology or pixels?
Where do we want to begin? Why don't we start with, I don't know, Google, which is kind of why we're all here.
Yeah.
I know. I like to keep pretty close to the Google stuff when I end up coming on to This Week in Google. It is, after all, in the name. But, I mean, honestly, as far as, like, days, weeks, important weeks in the year that Google has, you know, I mean, they have lots of important, memorable moments throughout the course of the year. Every year, this kind of hardware announcement event is probably right at the top of the list of some of the most important announcements that Google unveils. So I think it's probably safe to say we should talk about this and a lot, because there's a lot to talk about. First of all, you were at the event, Duncan. You were in the audience. Did you hear OK Google setting off millions of phones simultaneously throughout the course of the entire event?
I can't say that I did.
Okay.
That might be because most people had their devices away or they had them on silent, but I wasn't aware of anyone in my little area I was sitting in that had any sort of interaction with the "Hey Google," which is our way of avoiding the phrase.
That's a good way around.
So I get a lot of requests from people telling us that we should be respectful of their phones and their time on this sort of thing and use something that isn't the trigger word.
Yeah.
I just want to throw that out there.
I know. It's really hard to remember to do that, though, when you're talking about it. But I guess it's our job to talk about it, so I guess we should be more respectful about that. I just forget. It's not that I'm, like, trying to play a practical joke on people. I just forget until it's too late.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
But when we start adding control of your home with things, that's going to get dicey. Dicey!
It will, absolutely.
So what I still don't understand, since we're on this topic... If you have your phone with you and you have your home thing there, and you say the magic words, how will Google know which one? Right? They said that only one will respond, but how will they know which one?
So what they said at the event is they gave an example of a house that had three different units in it and you had your phone on you, and it will use the machine learning to detect what the input is, how loud it is in each speaker, and then it will just choose to use that input device. The question I had on that is how much lag will that be? Mm-hmm. I already experienced some lag when using that phrase. It will still trigger my phone, surely, because the phone has to be triggered in order to send the signal. So I still had some questions, but I think at least in the home itself, all of your lights might go off, but only one of them is going to talk back to you. But I think it was a little unclear still, Jeff, as you said, how that's going to work with the phone. The multi-device makes complete sense, but their explanation on how the phone worked just didn't seem to make logical sense with how the platform works now.
Right.
Right, so we'll find out in the middle of November when all of our homes arrive.
Yeah, so would you... Okay, so obviously they announced pretty much everything that they announced hardware-wise we already knew leading into it.
And no, we just mentioned this mournful moment because I always have to complain. No new Pixel laptop. And the Pixel laptop is gone, and this is worrying me greatly. But I just wanted to get that on the record. Google, are you listening? Google.
So what do you,
I love my Pixel.
What do you do in the meantime then? So you've got your Pixel 2.
If it dies, I'm borked.
Yeah, they aren't really selling the Pixel 2 anymore. So
you'd
have to hop over to one of the outside of not made by Google devices.
Ooh, risky.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just want to get that on the record. Right now, let's go on to the happy news.
Yeah, we don't have a Pixel 3 yet. Of course, that news was kind of bundled with the idea of this Andromeda, you know, some sort of a tease, some sort of a demonstration, or at least mention of the future of Android possibly converging with Chrome OS called Andromeda. Didn't hear about it in the event yesterday. I guess we're starting with what we didn't hear about. And in retrospect, it actually makes a whole lot of sense. Like, it really did kind of seem strange that a product announcement event would also be a keynote event that you might find at a conference like Google I/O or whatever. So in hindsight, it makes a lot of sense that we didn't hear about that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not happening. It also doesn't mean that a Pixel 3 is not happening. It just...
You want a crazy theory?
Yes, go.
Yeah.
So you remember IDF, Intel got up on stage, and even in their last earnings call, actually mostly at IDF, they didn't talk about PCs at all because this is like the end of the PC world. It's all about mobile. It's all about Internet of Things. It's all about cloud. So what if you think like a Pixel is kind of like a input old school kind of PC-like device, right? And you think about the merging of Chrome and iOS, not iOS, Chrome and iOS, let's be great together. Chrome and Android. What if they're like, let's really focus on where we're innovating, what's new, and that's why we got the AI focus and all the kind of homey stuff and then the phones. Just thought, because the phones are more about like a showcase for Google Assistant if you think about it that way. Crazy idea.
I don't think that's very crazy at all. I really think like big time, they led the event around AI. Like it was pretty much what the impression that I've gotten since the event, you know, kind of concluded and everything, is that Google really sees its AI as its killer feature. It's its killer feature of all of its hardware. Kind of saw this, you know, leading up to it. But the phones that they've announced, which we'll talk about in a second, premium price, and a lot of people are like, well, why are they so darn expensive? Google believes that its version of AI, the new assistant, replacing Google Now, at least in the Pixel phones at launch, and exclusively in the Pixel phones at launch, is one of the key marquee features that would move a true Google, you know, person who lives in the Google universe to, you know, understand that there's value in that higher price.
Okay, so here's my key question from the entire announcement, and one of you perhaps can answer it. How is it hardware dependent? I would think that all AI is occurring up at big computers somewhere, and that it's about communications and connectivity to AI-based servers and how they do all the work. How is this at all dependent upon the hardware of the phone? I don't understand that in the least.
Oh, I can answer this.
Go.
Oh, good.
Unless you don't want me to.
No, do it.
Okay, this is how I used to think about AI. I was like, you train it and execution's all in the cloud and you send it back down. But there are lots of things that require less latency. Two, there are things, especially in the home, where you want to train stuff for individual homes and you want to do it independent of an internet connection. Things like computer vision, if you can adjust those models like over time. So what's going to happen is the training will still happen in the cloud for the most part still. And then the execution happens on the device, but execution's still really intensive. So I guess, does that answer your question? I kind of got a little sidetracked. No.
No.
Leading on from that, though, in the one-on-ones following the event, they did make it clear there's nothing unique about the Pixel and the Pixel XL that would necessarily mean it's the only phone capable right. of using the new Google Assistant. What they did say is that they're still, you know, they use the term learning. The assistant's still learning. They're still teaching it. And one of the reasons why it's only on that one product is that as a feature from the search team, it's still developing. It's still building. Up until the latest release of Allo, it was still a preview review. Now, that hasn't been updated yet. I don't know if that'll change. But they made it quite clear that it's not that they're not going to partner in future or that it won't be open to others. It's that no one has approached them. And at the moment, they're very much taking a walk before they can run approach with that. It doesn't help that it does differentiate their hardware amongst any others.
Okay, so let me try a conspiracy theory here, which is that there really isn't any hardware dependency at all. That they're just using this as a rollout and a feature, and it's a marketing thing. And if there's no hardware dependency, then do I really need to spend $900 to buy a phone?
I don't.
If
feel
I'm
like,
just willing to wait longer,
I don't feel like that's conspiracy theory at all. I think that's exactly what you have here. I mean, Google. Yeah. What I've realized in thinking about the event and the announcement, in the past 24 hours, talking about it at length yesterday all over Twitter, and then taking a break from it, is that what Google really wanted to do with this event, I think, is Google wants to be seen on the same playing field as Apple or as Samsung about having a premium device that everybody really wants. And the way that they differentiate is kind of the same way that Samsung has tried to differentiate itself for a long time. Well-designed hardware, check. Also software that's unique to itself. And I think building Assistant into that hardware specifically right now, maybe that'll open up to other hardware down the line. And I don't see why it wouldn't. It actually makes a whole lot of sense. Why would Google want to keep that to just these phones? Because they're all about collecting, you know, and aggregating all this information. So down the line, yes, it would open up. But for right now, the differentiating software feature for Google is Assistant. I mean, there are other features there, but that is, I think, that is the special service that Sundar Pichai mentioned, you know, months ago when he said that, you know, Google's taking a much more focused look at how they're creating hardware, and they're going to be more opinionated about what they let on their hardware. It's going to be stock Android plus more, and this is part of the plus more that kind of differentiates it from everyone else. That makes sense.
If you look at the very opening of the keynote when Sundar Pichai came out and he spoke about the evolution of computing and the paradigm changes, the two messages I took out of the event is exactly what Jason just said, is that Google is here. They are a premium hardware company and they want to be seen that way. One of the reasons for the Pixel name was to completely separate themselves from Nexus, what Nexus was. One of the quotes they gave was, Nexus was the best of Android. Pixel is the best of Google. And so they made that very clear that, you know, Pixel is premium, Pixel is the best, Pixel is Google, and we'll discuss it later in the phones, but, you know, that's the reasoning they gave for a lot of the differences to the Nexus program we've seen in the past. But the other thing they're focusing in on was very clear is AI as a platform. They see that transcending the computer, being omnipresent, and they've had this line for a while, but it came through very clearly that they actually see AI as the next iteration of computing. Mm-hmm. It's not mobile first anymore, it's AI first. That was the words he used. And, you know, they're always trying to make sure they stay relevant in the next phase. And I think by taking ownership of AI and then extending that to others so everyone else is on their AI platform is the only way they can play that. So it definitely will open, I think.
That also struck me as interesting because that was very much a geek presentation of the idea. No consumer, or very few consumers rather, would understand the impact of AI on why I should buy this phone. Except, you know, we'll look at it and say, oh, AI, it's cool. Oh, gotta have that. I don't know what it means, but I gotta have that. Gotta have that, right? That's us. But real people would say, what? Whereas the real impact here is that it's Google's, and I've always argued, always, that Google is a personal services company versus mass media. We treat everybody the same. We give you all the same product. Google treats you as an individual, knows you as an individual, serves you as an individual. So now they can do that ever more, and they can anticipate your needs. There's all kinds of ways to say that. But saying you're AI first means nothing to consumers, I would think.
Well, Google has historically been a little too nerdy in their messaging because Google's a bunch of nerdy people. Right. I mean, bless their hearts. Yeah. And they're right that AI is the future, and they have one of the best platforms. Apple is terrible. Apple is not great at AI. And Google and Facebook are really dominating. Microsoft has some stuff. And so I think what we're going to see here, and Google's been aware for ages that with mobile and with computing everywhere, they're going to lose their primary revenue stream of ads presented on a screen after a search, yes. right? So they knew this was coming. Yes. So the answer is, how do you get ahead of it? And they, even years ago talking to people when talking about AI, they talked about it as a way to deliver better products to people, better services, possibly better hardware, but mostly better Google products. So, and that's what we've been seeing.
Yeah, and how do they do that to connect with the general consumer? Maybe AI as a buzzword isn't something that's going to pull the general consumer in, but personal assistant on your phone definitely does. At least that's what they've all been trying for the last few years. This now with assistant is an extension of that. So it might not be marketed as AI, but it's definitely AI driving this super handy, key feature of these devices. This is why you need it, because it's going to make it.
Let me just continue the conspiracy theory for a second. Let's just say that there's nothing hardware dependent for AI and super duper assistant on the new phone. I may be wrong, but let's just say that for the sake of argument. If that's the case, what else? And the camera is supposed to be a wonderful camera. All right. So those are the two things that I heard yesterday that make this phone stand out. Other than that, why should I replace my 6P?
Well, what do you think, Duncan?
Well, that's a really tough sell if I'm trying to sell you on outlaying your own money. So, yeah, having had quite a considerable amount of time, I stayed back a little bit longer yesterday to do a lot of mucking around where I could with both of the devices. Look, the overall build quality of the phone is amazing. I think partnering with HTC, who are known to be exceptional at manufacturing great devices when they want to, their prowess from the M7 onwards was very evident in the construction of the device, the antenna lines, the zero gap. You can run your finger over that, and you'll need younger hands than mine to detect anything other than a completely smooth interface. A little bit of glass at the top really did offset it. So, overall, you can see that someone has obsessively designed. I was very worried with the early renders that it would have an angular feel, an angular back. And now, look, the front does have a bit of an angular bezel. You don't touch that. If I had any complaint, it would be that buttons stuck out a little bit too much. But then I've complained that other phones, they didn't stick out enough. So I'm not really going to complain about that.
But that's criticism of how well this phone is done. In terms of going to the market and saying you're going to spend $650 to $800, it was $900 on a phone, what do you think the proper argument is?
Yeah, convincing the general consumer that this is on par with the top-of-the-line phones out there.
So I reviewed the Note 7, and I'd put them as equal
devices. You survived!
I did. Mine never had any issues, except the fact that they took it off me. That was an issue I had with it. The camera launched just as fast. The images shot just as fast in wildly whipping the phone around the room to different focal depths, different lighting situations. I was rarely able to get the camera to fault and create a less than acceptable image.
On the Pixel phones.
On the Pixel phones.
Got it.
Which is the kind of test we did with the Note as well. It was a great camera. This is the camera that Google hardware fans, Nexus fans have been waiting for. It is delivered. It was fast. It was slick. I can't fault it. Will it work every single time on every photo? No. But what camera will?
Right. So, Stacey, you haven't ordered. Are you going to?
No, I'm not going to. I am actually not a huge mobile phone adopter. So I'm content to wait another year.
Because you never leave your home because you're always IoT, so you have to be at home, so you're just not mobile?
Exactly. No, what are you talking about? I'm outside of my home right now. I'm in someone else's home.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I think you just brought in some sets from IKEA just to make
this is just another room
that you left. Room, yes.
I'm not going to order this phone just because it's expensive. I'm content with what I have. I judge a device based on, this is sad, I'm so lame. Can I text with it? Can I you know, open the apps I need to do to test my home gadgets, and does it offer geofencing? I mean, it's so lame.
It is, Stacey. I'm
I know. You guys are like, God, why do we even have you on this show?
I don't even know what to say now.
So I'm your normal person when it comes to phones.
I mean, do you place high value on things like a camera in the phone that you have? Because, I mean, they say the best camera you have is the one you have on you.
Right. And I'm totally that person.
Yeah.
I mean, God, you guys would hate me. I was actually looking at so I had a theory for you, Jeff. This is the first phone to have the Qualcomm 821, Snapdragon 821 chip. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking at the specs on that chip to see if there was anything specific to machine learning or kind of
any
AI.
That's why we love you, Stacey. That's why we love you. You look for the specs on the chip.
Well, that's
great. I would never think to do that, and I wouldn't know what I was looking at. So thank you. So what'd you find?
I found nothing related to machine learning. That's the downside. I mean, it's a 64-bit CPU, but that's not new. It's a little bit faster. It's got a nice graphics core for image processing, but nothing that made me go, holy cow, this is what it is. So sorry, I failed you.
So then the other thing from yesterday when you guys were talking about it, as I was watching you, you, Jason, particularly had concern about the Verizon, as you could probably channel me that it's Verizon.
Yeah.
Human. But the one I ordered online is, as I understand it, is just an unlocked phone that also does Fi, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really an issue. It's only going to be sold through Verizon, but I can use it on AT&T, right?
Well, here's my concern with Verizon. This is definitely something that I want to make sure we talk about because there's a few different levels on this. My main concern is if Google's intention, if their ambition with this is to come out with this new lineup of phones Hiroshi Lockheimer said on Twitter, alluded to something about this being at least looked back upon in the future as a historic moment, much in the same way that the launch of Android was 8 years ago. I don't know if I necessarily buy that, but I think part of his reason for saying that is that this is the point in Google's history where Google takes control over its hardware and puts a stamp, puts hardware out there that they hope can be seen on the same level as something like Apple's iPhone or Samsung's Galaxy devices. If their goal is to do that, if what they want is market penetration, they want not just enthusiasts who are fans of Google and Nexus and all that, they want everybody to suddenly consider this a real player in the field, then they need to position their devices in the places that consumers are going. And if you've got a Verizon exclusive, that's not going to reach everybody. That totally limits their reach. Selling it through the store is fine. Through their online presence is fine. Selling it through Best Buy, that's great. People can go into Best Buy. But so many people get these phones through the carriers that if you're only showing it at a Verizon, then, I mean, you're going to lose in your ambitions of making this a fully penetrated, device that everybody wants. It's just not going to happen.
Maybe they don't want to do that the first one out the gate.
Maybe that could be the case,
Although I did see, so I think The Verge was reporting that the Verizon version of this will not have Verizon crapware on it.
Good.
So that was hopeful, although you won't be able to get it until Tuesday, I believe, when you can order it. Oh, yesterday was Tuesday. Can you order it on Verizon now?
I don't know. I haven't looked into that.
Is it this Tuesday or yesterday Tuesday? When I travel, I forget all days.
Yeah, understood. Duncan, you and I were talking about this a little bit prior to the show, and you were kind of positing that maybe part of the Verizon exclusivity, maybe there's something in that deal that dictated the fact that you would be able to get instant updates on these devices and that maybe there wouldn't be bloatware on there.
Yeah, we were discussing that with them. It seems to be in all the launch markets, they've partnered with just one carrier. And in a lot of instances, it seems to be, in inverted commas, the premium carrier. Certainly in Australia, they've partnered with Telstra, which has a love-hate relationship, very similar to Verizon with many of their customers. And so I wonder if by making those exclusive deals, you're the only ones to have the best Android phone, the Google phone, if they leverage that to say, but you don't touch it. You sell it, but there is no carrier branding. There is no bloatware. There is no contacts apps. It is as it comes. You let the updates go straight through to us, to the customers, just like Apple does. They launch their first phone with a single provider. Maybe it's a similar program. Maybe their hope is to get it right this first time and then say to everyone else, right, if you want this same deal, you can have it. have it exclusive 1 year, and then the following years, perhaps everyone else will comply.
Yeah, and that's the hope. I mean, that's certainly been one of the challenges for Android in general, kind of the deal that made with the devil years and years ago, where you get these Android devices on all the platforms and you don't get the fast updates. You know, who's at fault there? You know, that can be debated. But in this case, it's Google behind the scenes. And they are touting this from a promotional standpoint as being updates as fast as they come from Google, direct from Google. So if they've got it on the Verizon platform, I have to imagine if that's their marketing, that they're going to put, you know, that's going to ring true for Verizon. And then the other complaint is, of course, you know, kind of that bloatware. Also, Verizon's really good about making sure that their Verizon logo is somewhere on the phone. It's usually very, very big and kind of an eyesore. Any images that we've seen here do not show that. So maybe that's part of the deal. Maybe the fact is this time Google did what it needed to do to work out those that relationship in the same way that Apple was able to do years ago.
And with the same announcement of where they'd be retailed, where they'd be through carrier stores, they said, you will be getting the update straight from us, monthly updates. So you can't...
That is key. You can't say that. You're right.
And say, and then, but that's only for these devices. If that's the case, they needed to make that clear.
It's not Google branded then. Yeah. Stacey, you can order it on Verizon. And interestingly, Jason, the blue is still available there.
Oh, okay. I did read somewhere that there was some sort of a blue exclusivity through Verizon, even though I was able to order it on the store yesterday. Yeah.
Could you order the bigger one, the 128 gigabytes?
No. So as far as I can tell, they don't have that. I think it's only 32 in the blue.
Same at Verizon.
Okay, well, I can rush over to a Verizon store, or I could actually sacrifice myself and order it because I'm a Verizon customer. But, God, that's so expensive. I'll think about it. I'm buying an iPhone for device testing. So I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, here you go. So $649 for 32-gig model of the regular Pixel, $749 for 128 gigs. Pixel XL costs $769 for 32 gigs. $869 for 128 gigs. And then you have the three colors, quite black, very silver, and really blue, which is a limited edition. Thankfully, I was able to get the really blue one before it sold out yesterday.
I was nervous about 32 because my current one has 64. So I went with the 128 and spent another $100.
Yeah, right. But, you know, they're saying there's a little bit of this kind of like next bit theory going on here, or ethos going on here, where they're saying if you get these Pixel devices, you're not going to run out of space, because as soon as you get low, the device has smarts to automatically get rid of your older stuff that's already backed up to the cloud.
Just photos, right?
Photos.
Yeah. Right. Photos and videos, they said. And it'll do it dynamically. So the way they explained it is, let's say you've got a photo from 8 months ago you're always going back to. It's the favorite photo of your wife and child, for instance. That one will stay because you keep accessing it. But everything around it, everything since it, will just get siphoned off the phone. And if that's not enough, they said in the one-on-one briefings afterwards that on the Pixel device, that secret sauce goes a little bit deeper. They didn't give us a demo. It's not quite to the next bit level where it just automatically handles these things and offloads app and offloads this. And when you want it, it magically appears. But there, it's going to have a new wizard that will prompt you and say, hey, you're running out of space. There's not enough photos to get rid of. You haven't used this app in some time. They didn't go into a lot of detail, but they're certainly putting a little bit more intelligence into the smarts around memory management beyond just automatically, dynamically offloading your photos and videos, which, when are offloaded, will be in original content.
Right, size.
Yeah, including the 4K videos.
So here's guess what I'm going to complain about now.
What, Jeff?
Well, so
which account does it go to?
Right. Well, that's exactly the problem. So because the various things came out on regular Google accounts before apps accounts, all my photos are under my regular Google account. And so I guess I need to move them over to my apps account, but who knows, or pardon me now, G Suite account.
G Suite, yes.
Or pardon me for this, but I can't help thinking it's the G Spot account.
That's okay, because whenever they say YouTube Red, you know what I think of. Okay,
right, exactly. So, what was it? When the iPad came out, there was a lot of, Gina was talking about that as well, that it was an odd reference. But anyway, enough of that. So I don't know what's going to happen with all of the assistant stuff and all that on the account. So I have this nervousness that I'm going to start setting it up and it's going to get all McGilla again.
Yeah.
We'll see. Whining
yeah, that's
to come.
Be, that's something to deal with Google Home, too. So we can complain again. Complain yeah. anew about which account it's going to learn from.
That's right. Do you think that it won't handle apps accounts?
I don't know. I don't know what it's going to do. Nobody knows anything.
If history has told us anything, we probably already know the answer. Let's talk about Home next. But before we do that, we have to thank the sponsor of today's episode. And then we'll get into all that. Of course, Jeff Jarvis talking all about yesterday's event, Stacey Higginbotham, and then joined here at the table by Duncan Jaffray. Really appreciate you dropping in, giving us your insight from the event.
Thank you.
Real quick here, want to thank the sponsor of today's episode, that is Hover. It's for when you have a great idea, you know, your blog or startup, you want a great domain name. It's kind of pivotal. It's important to the whole process. With Hover, it's incredibly easy to set up your domain name with the most popular website builders. Hover has over 400 domain extensions. All the classics, of course. You know, you've got all their albums, .com, .net, but then all those indie domain extensions as well. Things like .pizza, .ninja, .horse. All over. Think of it and it probably exists. Once you find your domain, use Hover Connect to set up your domain automatically with your website in just a few clicks. You can also use it to get a more on-brand or professional email address, and domain works with whatever email programs you already are using. When all you want to do is buy a domain name or an email address, you shouldn't have to opt out of page after page of add-ons that you don't want or you don't need. That's why Hover only offers domains and email. That's so that you can focus on finding a great domain name and then get back to working on your great idea, the most important part of all. Unlike most other domain providers, Hover includes free Whois privacy with all supported domains to keep your information confidential. And if you already have multiple domains scattered across other domain providers, you can save money by bringing them all over to Hover. With volume discounts, the more domains you have in your account, the more of a discount Hover will automatically apply to your account. So you're incentivized there to just bring it on over. Find the perfect domain name for your idea. Go to hover.com. You can use promo code TWIG, that's T-W-I-G, at checkout to save 10% off your first purchase. That's hover.com. Use promo code TWIG at checkout. And we thank Hover for their support of This Week in Google. So I would say there were the phones, which was a big deal. There was also Google Home, which we knew was, you know, we knew all this stuff was coming. But personally, I'm very excited about Google Home. I placed the order yesterday during the live coverage. Stacey, did you also order during our coverage?
I just ordered one, though.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah.
I held back.
Okay. There's restraint. I appreciate that. Jeff, did you get one? Oh, never mind. Never mind. Well, I'll ask you in a second, Jeff. What about you, Duncan?
They're not available in Australia.
No!
Oh, Australia.
That whole thing of U.S. only, probably.
Yes.
Or maybe limited to U.S. and maybe in a few other places. I actually didn't notice who is getting home initially.
I think it is just U.S. only. I don't think even Canada.
Canada did not get it. I had some Canucks who were like,
oh.
However.
Man, I'm sorry.
Unofficially. They did hint, several of the Googlers there hinted that there will be expansion plans, unlike OnHub that never really grew or went anywhere. The Google Home, they have definite expansion plans, and they have expansion plans this market cycle. Even hinted that maybe for people in first-tier Pixel markets who didn't get it this time around. So if you got a Pixel and you didn't get a Home, maybe you should keep watching the news until closer to the end of this year and start looking for items closer to the beginning of next year. So the hinting they were saying is that perhaps if all goes well and the assistant works and it's all hinging on the assistant, that's the reason they don't want to take it wider. If assistant works well, they will open up the news later this year that it's going to go wider. Sales will become available for early 2017. All unofficially, all no promises.
Would it work, or would they geofence it?
Well, you know,
the Echo is geofenced. Only some things can work in other countries where it's not supported. I don't know what Google will do. It could be training around accents or languages with the Pixel, you think?
They said that was one of the issues, both with training it to hear and training it to speak, picking up dialects and colloquial expressions and being able to respond in a conversational way. But if I know my editor-in-chief, Daniel Tyson, he will, if he can't import one, he will get on a plane, come over here, buy it from Best Buy, get back on the plane and come back. So we should be able to test one in Australia relatively soon.
I mean, you could throw it off the path with like a VPN though, right? With that, I mean, that works for the most part with tech like this.
It does. Coming from the land down under, we have a lot of VPN requirements depending on what we're doing.
Right.
So, yep.
Jeff, did you order a Google Home when you were able to?
Yep, I did. I put myself on the waiting list for the whatever they're calling, the goggles and the Wi-Fi.
Well, you know, the goggles actually are included.
Come free with the phone.
If you pre-ordered the phone.
Yeah, so I didn't realize that. So you get a code like a month before the phone arrives, it said.
Oh, is that how it worked? I didn't see exactly how it worked. I just knew that
you can't order the goggles yet, right?
I don't believe you can, no.
And so, yeah, you'll get a promo code for a big $79. After having spent $900, they should throw in the $79.
Yeah, let's see here. I did. Yeah, it's a join the wait list for Daydream View. So let's see here. But before we talk about View, maybe that made more sense with the phone. But let's talk about Home because that's really super exciting. Home voice assistant, obvious, and I think it's very interesting that it sounds like what they're doing in some ways is limiting based on the fact that they want to see how assistant does before pushing it out. That's a great way to kind of control your live beta test, although they probably don't want to call it a beta test, though to some degree it's kind of sounds like maybe it is.
Growing pains.
Yeah, growing pains. It's probably better. I mean, there isn't a whole lot that we didn't already know about Home. Voice assistant, a set of microphones. They've done a lot of work on the far field voice recognition machine learning that will actively filter background noise. Minimize error rates. They say it's the best-in-class voice recognition. All sorts of controls, obviously. You control all Chromecast devices with it, Nest, smart things, music services like Spotify, Google Play Music, Pandora, iHeartRadio, YouTube, If This Then That, Netflix, I think by extension through Chromecast, Philips Hue, and I think that's about it. But Stacey, you've got your head firmly kind of – you're always thinking about the Internet of Things. Are you happy with what you saw with Google Home? Are there obvious downsides to what you saw?
There are. So the biggest pro will be talking to Google as opposed to Bing, which is what happens when you talk to the Echo. There you go. I'm totally serious.
Yes, I know you are.
Multicasting is probably great for a lot of people. And because it will talk to Chromecast, if you stick a Chromecast audio in the auxiliary port of your Sonos speaker, that should also allow you to control it. So in a way, that's like a kind of hacky way to get around to your Sonos without having to run a Raspberry Pi all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's a pro. The things that I didn't hear that I want to hear how it actually sounds. These demos, like you brought up yesterday, they all have a different voice. So I'm like, is this just pre-recorded? How what's the latency like on that? How effective is it when I say the wake words? Right. How many times will it wake up on its own and be like, creeping me out? So those are some things. The others are, there's not a lot of partners so far. I think we're going to see a lot more. I hope we're going to see a lot more. But right now, only If This Then That, SmartThings, Philips Hue, and Nest. Is there one more? Did I miss one?
That's pretty much it. I mean, okay. Outside of like Chromecast, like outside of Chromecast and
So I want to see Logitech Harmony. I really want to see Wink. Mm-hmm. I want to see Ecobee. I mean, so many devices I want to see. I was going to say you could do them with If This and That, but
right. That was my question.
That's got so much latency. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
So what does that depend upon, Stacey, for those brands you just mentioned to write to the API or for Google to invite them in? What's the gating?
So that's unclear. To do any of these integrations, you have to have both parties decide to work together. So there's going to be an API kind of issue or an SDK issue, depending on how they're going to link them. So that's one. But the other thing may be that Google's just not ready to bring in all this other stuff because they don't know how well Home is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Logitech Harmony might actually be competitive with Chromecast TV. like the Chromecast stuff on the television, because you could be like, Google, play Stranger Things on Netflix is the demo they showed, and your TV just was like, Stranger Things. And if that happens, then why would they want Logitech Harmony?
Ease of use for consumer, but
I was about to say, except for the consumers, but clearly we don't matter.
Who cares about the consumer?
Oh, them.
Oh, those bothersome people.
So you're going to end up with this clutter around the house. So one question is, should Google have designed a home that had the Wi-Fi router in it? Should that be an option? You know, a super duper one they should offer in the future?
Yeah, I wondered about that too.
That costs a lot of money. Kevin and I talked about that on the show. So I would have loved it, but a lot of people still stick their routers in, like in the mesh networks, you stick your little access points that are mesh network routers all around the house. But in a traditional setup, your router's usually
in
a closet. So that's one thing. Two things. I don't know what the second thing is. Oh, it would be super expensive because
yes, that's true.
All the computing power that all these things need. Although I think these routers actually have some decent computing power in them. So
I did maybe see that the good news is that the last Google router is compatible with the mesh network.
Yes, and I don't know why Google didn't talk about that. The On Hub, you could actually, if you have an On Hub, you can add a Google Wi-Fi mesh network router to your On Hub,
right,
and just go to town.
Good. Good for all those people who bought an On Hub and expected some sort of promised software updates, including you, Jeff. So all you need to get is a Google Wi-Fi, their just announced router, and a mesh that together with your On Hub, and you've got solid Wi-Fi throughout your home if you don't already.
So, Stacey, my other question is, I think that I saw yesterday, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago after I.O., Google wants Home to be built into other devices, yes?
That isn't clear. This is actually something I was in San Francisco last week and I talked about with a lot of the people there, but Google's natural language processing API, they don't really make that available. It's some companies have access to it, but most companies don't. They're not pushing it like Amazon is with their the She Who Shall Not Be Named program. They even just launched $2.5 million prize for making things more conversational. So Amazon's clearly pushing that. Google so far doesn't have anything, but it's really early. The device isn't even out yet. So
they did mention, so they talked a little bit about this towards the end, basically, the SDK, where they're saying, you know, you can bring assistant to third-party hardware due next year. And leading up to that, they had, what was it, the actions on Google, which is direct actions for things like home automation, media requests, communication, and then conversational actions that people can program in. For example, you know, the example I was able to find was, I need an Uber. Where would you like to go? To work. Would you like an Uber X? Again,
but
yes,
that is not to be built into other devices, which is kind of what Jeff's talking about.
Right. No. So this is just an expansion of it in general, assistant on the software side that developers can do. And then starting next year, some sort of SDK access for developers to kind of do their third party hardware thing.
So isn't there a war that occurs among Google and Amazon? And I would guess at some point Apple is going to have to compete with Siri in this world, right?
Oops.
Sorry. What did I say?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out. No, you said the name.
You said Siri.
Oh,
sorry. Yeah, and sorry.
The other she who must not be named.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
So many things we can't say on this show. Dang it.
That's a bad word. You know, Google's Android strategy was to get Android built into everything. And of course, now they're trying a different tack, but for home, an assistant, I would think that they'd want to build it into everything. It could just be the strategy that they do.
They did say during the keynote that it would be available on everything from a Raspberry Pi all the way through to third-party consumer devices. So, you know, if you want to tinker, the SDK will be available, and you can build assistant into a Raspberry Pi. Home, sorry, into a Raspberry Pi. How well that works, we'll wait and see. But, you know, I think they are serious. And again, I think it's a walk before they can run. They're really wanting to learn rapidly. They want to teach this assistant, their AI, how things work. I think it is their next ecosystem play. So, I think it will be opened.
Yes, it would have to be. I mean, Google's an open company. It makes sense that it would be open. I've talked to companies like smart home companies who are already talking to Google about it and have been before the announcement. So I don't think they're going to be shut out. The only company right now that shuts people out is Apple. So like if you have a HomeKit certified device, you know, it can't run like the Thread protocol radios, the Thread radio. And so there's some rules and stuff associated with Apple that closes things out, but both Amazon and Google are seemingly going open.
So let's talk business model here for a second. Let's imagine, just for the sake of it, that there's a wonderfully open world and you can buy a generic device, you know, like it's also a cable box and a Wi-Fi router and a garage door opener. And let's say you could get both Google Home Assistant and, which by the way are really dull names, and Amazon's, what's her name, on the same device, right? And that you can call upon either. Amazon makes money here by delivering you goods and content. Google makes money how?
Sucking your information on and delivering it to, I don't know, advertisers? Or it could be on you buying more services from them. Right now, they're really, I mean, think about YouTube Red, and they're charging people for the ad-free version of that. There's the hardware efforts. I think we're going to see a lot more services from Google. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is they might be outsourcing some of this to other companies. So like what we haven't seen yet in the smart home space, and I'm not saying Google will do this, but it certainly is in the running if it wants to be. We don't have a model that installs and manages and secures everything associated with the smart home, for example. And that's a big need if we actually want this to become a viable business, right? So Comcast is like, hey, we'll do it all. ADT is the same way. Google could actually come in and do that either itself, which is less likely, or through ways it governs its third-party ecosystem players. So if you're imagining that you want to connect something to Google Assistant, or you want to use like Weave or Brillo, if you have to, in order to enable those things on your device, if you have to like come in through the Google Cloud, that's a way for them to guarantee security, for example, and maybe some basic levels of functionality. That's what Apple does with HomeKit. And that's a little far out there, but it's worth thinking about. And there they may make money either charging consumers a service fee on top of it or maybe just by shoving people to their cloud.
They don't take any money. When you say to one of these devices, get me an Uber, nobody's taking a cut of that now.
No, but they do get to train the their Echo, AI. No. I mean, if they really do think AI is first and the next big thing... Every single time you do a voice search, every single time you correct a voice search, it learns, it gets better, it goes into the data pool. Every single data point is useless, a million data points less so. And yet, back to what Stacey said, it'll build a better advertising profile. You're still going to have a screen. You're still going to be accessing the web on whatever screen we have in the future, whether it's a glass, a phone, a hologram, your TV. You know, as long as this screen model exists and Google exists in it, the more data they get on you, the richer the ads, the more targeted content that they can serve on behalf of other people, and they sell that service. Right. They never sell your details. They sell the ability to access demographics. But the ability to train an AI with crowdsourced data, real live data, and then maybe they can sell AI as a service to business or to other people,
because right. Okay, so stay on that. That's interesting. Right. So in my business in news, we're not going to know how to be conversational. We're going to do a bad job of that. We're not going to know how to have user profiles. We're not going to know lots of things. So play with that a little bit more. If you were to sell AI as service, which would be AIAS.
It looks like Watson. That's what I mean.
AIAS.
AIAS.
Yeah.
Eyes.
Don't say that.
If you were to sell eyes, What would that look like? What would the services be? That's really interesting.
So if we will use your example then, so you're a media outlet, you're big enough to afford these sorts of things, and you're wanting to have perhaps automatic articles written. We know they're not just doing speech, they're doing text. Perhaps it lets that to be auto-generated, and they can sell you the ability to, you know, spin up a TensorFlow and, you know, have whatever the other plugin name, whatever it is, have this massive conversational database, be able to pass information, then to be able to bring that out in a different way. You could be in customer service. You know, all of these chat bots that we see in customer service bots, they're horrible. I haven't used any bot that I like. And I saw the glimmer yesterday of being able to, I don't need to know a bot, I just say to my phone, I want something. So I say, I need to talk to AT&T. Well, if AT&T has paid for the bot I interact there is rich. It talks to me. It's like a real person. Mm-hmm. I have a conversation. Now, hopefully it's a little bit better than I want an Uber. Where are you going? Because I just pull out Google Maps, tap the destination, and tap travel by Uber, and that takes me about 10 seconds.
You're right. But the dread is we're going to be talking to a voice that's just like a phone mail jail.
So I think what people in our excitement over voice, what we're neglecting is that voice isn't good for everything. And I think a lot of people, mm-hmm. like developers, know that. So they're like, we talked about this yesterday, but in some of the Google Home examples, it was like, give me directions, or where can I buy winter clothing, and something about like, here are the three stores, give me directions to one of those. And if the Google Home just says that to you, that sucks. But if it sends that type of information to your phone, that's really interesting. Right. So I think we'll see more of that. And I was going to throw out some data, because a company called Yonomi that does smart home software that brings everything together in many of your devices together in kind of an intelligent thing. That was a terrible thing for your home. They said that only about 30% of their interactions are via voice, and about 50%, 55 or 60% are through traditional automations. And then the like 12 are from your phone widgets. So I think voice is going to become greater than that, but it won't ever become everything.
The same AI should be able to power.
I think you're muted suddenly. Oh, there we go.
The same AI should be able to power any engine in time. So however you choose to interface, that learning set, the more they know, the more they see, the more they do, just their ability to mimic conversational human-style reactions.
I just want one. I don't know. I've been following this conversation. I don't have anything to add to it. This is pretty fascinating.
I still can't believe you don't have an Echo.
I was waiting. I don't have one either. I was waiting.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of got to the point where I was like, you know what? I need to get an Echo. And then I went to Google I.O. and they shut off Google Home. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I don't. I'm going to wait.
Oh, well, Google did its job by pre-announcing the Home. Yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah. True.
MN7 in the chat room gave an interesting example using AI to replace human court reporters, or perhaps recorders in political situations. Hmm. Once it gets beyond that, you know, spoke about the getting from 87% efficiency to 92%, right, and how difficult it was. But, you know, when they train it on 100,000, a million people saying all of these things every day, does that data set get them to 96, 97, 98, 99?
Well, the big leap in voice recognition was actually in the computing side in the back end as opposed to training sets. But it's possible that greater sources of training data will boost us the rest of the way.
And
although
it'll be merged, won't it?
Yes. But there's also like body language. Like I think they say people only understand like 96, 92 or 96% of the words, and the rest we just make up with body language. Mm. So for what that's worth.
Let's see here. We should probably take a break. We haven't even talked about everything from the event at this point. We still have VR. I don't know if VR is super exciting to everybody on this panel. I know I'm excited about VR. At least I seem to be getting more and more excited as the year of VR progresses. I feel like this has been a big year for that. Google showed off Daydream View. We'll talk about that in a second. But before we do that, let's get hungry. It's time to thank the sponsor, Blue Apron, whose mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Also supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of chefs, basically making you a better chef. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Every meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card inside the box and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. You'll save time, you'll save money. When you're shopping at the grocery store, that's 60% more expensive than what you get with Blue Apron. And you're going to spend under $10 per person for healthy home-cooked meals. You know, how does that compare to, you know, say, eating out or going to a high-end grocery chain? It's a lot less than what you'll spend. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences and choose a delivery option that fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. and sets the highest quality standards for their community. They have over 150 local farms, fisheries, ranchers across the U.S. So you're going to get seafood that's sourced sustainably, beef that's raised humanely, chickens that are free range, pork is raised naturally, and also regenerative farming practices used for produce. They're shipping the exact amount required for these recipes. So not only are they reducing food waste, it actually makes putting these recipes together pretty simple because you have exactly what you need to match up with what's on the card. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron brings you the best. And not only that, it's supporting a more sustainable food system. It's supporting happy and healthy families because when you cook together, you know, build strong family bonds. Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. New recipes created every week by Blue Apron's culinary team. They're not repeated within the year, so they really keep it fresh week after week. You've got crispy chicken milanese with warm Brussels sprouts, celery, and potato salad. Thai green curry chicken and squash with yu choy, jasmine rice, and cashews. We've got roasted pork steam buns with black garlic mayonnaise and spicy cabbage slaw, and seared salmon and fall vegetable hash with apple brown butter dressing. All of that, all of those, you know, those are all recipes that you make when you sign up for Blue Apron. You get to learn how to make those and a whole lot more. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Visit blueapron.com/twit and check it out for yourself. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of This Week in Google. We talked about home. We talked a little bit about the Wi-Fi, the mesh network, which I'm definitely excited about. We haven't talked at all about Daydream. We wondered if we were going to hear a little bit about VR. Obviously, under the hood on Nuga is VR support in the form of something Google calls Daydream. We got more details on that. The version of Android that's shipping with these phones is 7.1. And that includes support for Daydream officially under the hood. These are the first devices to follow the Daydream spec. And along with that, if you pre-order, like we mentioned earlier, you get a free Daydream View headset, which is essentially Google's own version of this headset to get you started. And it's very different because it's like covered in cloth. Now, you were at the event, Duncan. Did they have these for hands-ons? And if so, what did you think?
They did. So I booked in for a demo and I got to spend, I don't know, about 10 minutes inside Daydream. And it's the best mobile VR experience I've had so far. I've got cardboard. I've got. I've played with the Gear VR. I've even tried Oculus. It's not quite on that level, but nor would you expect it to be. But one thing that it does that none of the others do is fit over these glasses.
Yes, that's okay. That was my main question, Duncan. That sounded like heaven to us four.
You know these
people.
Bits here. You put them on and they get jigged.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, no more. Bent in, or they press against your temple, or whatever the case may be.
They just went straight in. I didn't even have to force the headset on. The material is soft. It did breathe. I quite often sort of sweat up or, you know, fog up the screen when I'm using VR, especially in the muggy Queensland weather.
I mentioned this yesterday morning on the live coverage, and it kind of freaks Stacey out a little bit. It looks like it's freaking her out again. The harsh reality of VR, Stacey.
Not so with the time I spent. Now, perhaps they did have several very, very large air conditioning trucks, so perhaps the temperature was well controlled.
Right.
But I didn't fog up in the 10 minutes in there using their new Daydream controller, which is a pivotal part of the standard and something that must be approved by Google before any third-party hardware can be Daydream certified. It really made a big difference. I've, you know, using all of the other controllers, interacting with your face like this isn't good. Using a D-pad that doesn't allow you to point isn't good. Using a gamepad is all right. This thing was just intuitive. I mean, you just move your hand around and it shoots a beam out. You know, a very simple button layout. They certainly got the control interface right.
Nice.
For now, the latency was great. I do get a bit of motion sickness with some VR games. I didn't with any of these. Now, they weren't the type that twist and turn and throw you around with a multi-axis spin, so that could very well be why. But it was really comfortable. It was really great. I got to try a tilt-a-ball game, where you're racing against the computer, and a 3D dinosaur experience. I tried to boot up the Harry Potter one, and he took the control off me.
No, I was going to ask you about that. That was kind of the marquee one that they really showed off to get everybody excited.
It was there. It was installed,
And they would let you play with it.
They had a lot of people and small timelines.
I see.
It's second gen, is how I would put it. Having played with the first gen. It's definitely second-gen mobile VR.
I see what you mean. Not second-gen as in cardboard was first-gen? Is that what you mean? Okay. Well, that's a big step up, although it wouldn't take a whole lot to best
it
cardboard.
But when we spoke to the VR team, though, they said, you know, the subtle hints, the fact it's got a head strap, that means that they're confident you can wear it without getting sick. You don't have to hold it up. You're not limited. I think it was 25 milliseconds now. The previous was 110 milliseconds, and they've got the frequency response down to 25, and it really shows. It was really good. I've always been interested / excited about VR, although I've never found a great use for it, apart from fun.
Right.
But, you know,
How heavy is it?
It was light.
On your face.
It was like it wasn't there because it really is a small amount of plastic, obviously, for the molding. One thing for you, Stacey, is the bit that does touch your face is replaceable, washable, so you can have your own.
Yes.
It just pulls out and another one drops in. So you don't need to worry. You can share one device and not have to worry too much about that.
Oh, I love it. Okay, because, like, how gross would it be to, like, see, like, you know, the brims of your hats?
Right. Try my VR viewer. This is a really cool game. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Yeah. I really like that the controller docks inside the visor. I think that was a super, like, thoughtful touch.
Nice.
You know, I mean, it seems like a small thing, but I think it's actually a really, really big thing.
And other small things like having NFC inside the visor. So when the phone goes in, it automatically pairs. With cardboard, you had to get it exactly lined up.
Yep.
This has two little touch pads that basically tell the phone within a reasonable error that, okay, here it, and like then it zeroes the screen. So where you're looking is perfectly centered. You don't have to get that lined up just perfectly.
Yeah.
They've done the little things.
If they really want, you know, if the goal is to kind of take VR to the next level, you got to make it easy for the general consumer. And having to, like, reposition it and slide it all around once you get it in the visor, no one enjoys that. And that just kind of being able to drop it in. The way they showed it off, and I'm happy that it does that kind of smart alignment. So you can
dumb question time. That's my specialty. Will it work with all the other VR stuff I have?
In what respect, Jeff?
No, I mean, any other stuff that I've downloaded onto my Nexus phone that has worked in cardboard or whatever, there's no compatibility issue with earlier VR stuff.
I wouldn't imagine so because they spoke about the catalog, but, you know, they never mentioned that and I never thought to ask.
Yeah, I didn't think about that aspect either, the fact that we have almost 2 years now of a cardboard ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine because, I mean, I feel like cardboard VR is like you said, it's a step down in dimension versus what you get here, which adds a whole layer of extra dimension with the control aspect. This would actually be simpler than that.
Yeah, actually, thinking about what the head of VR said is I don't think they will be compatible. There is a very rigorous compatibility process. If you submit an app for Daydream certification, it is more than the standard Google Play Store approval process. It is actually tested for latency because their hardware is working. They've got the integrations there. The platform works fine. They don't want someone to code an experience for VR that just breaks all that. I mean, if I went home tonight, figured out a code, put something together and checked it on the Play Store, it would be terrible.
So this could be an issue. I mean, we don't know yet. We don't know if it's backward compatible if it's downward compatible with other things. But that'd be an issue if you're a VR maker and you've made stuff. There's people in my business that have made a lot of VR news stuff. I hope for their sake that it's usable. I just don't know yet.
They will have to resubmit it.
They will. Wow.
Or it's automatic. But yeah, it'll have to be, it will have to be compatibility tested. They made
that clear.
But I saw
the New York Times, they were a partner in the VR stuff, right? I saw their list or their name up on the list, I swear, of VR Daydream partner people.
They definitely are. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's because, I mean, if what you're saying here, you know, yes, they had a cardboard app, but they are also a partner on Daydream. So maybe they've done the work to make that happen. I would find it really strange if Google just said, all right, 2 years of cardboard stuff. Sorry, you're going to have to start from scratch. But I understand they really do want Daydream to be a very tightly kind of honed in experience.
It's very Apple-y about controlling that experience. Yeah. You know, not everything's going to get through. Only things that are good. Now, perhaps the New York Times had to do no work. Perhaps their app worked and was acceptable for Daydream. Same APK, no difference. They're, you know, the things that will come out in the coming days, weeks, months. But yeah, it's not an instant. That free dinosaur app that you downloaded that already made you sick on cardboard, I can almost guarantee that one won't be in Daydream unless the developer really does something to it.
Interesting. Or unless there's some sort of like cardboard wrapper app that allows you to run cardboard. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Cardboard compiler?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. That'd be a roundabout way to do it. I don't think Google would be too thrilled about that. But I suppose
always sideload.
Did we miss anything from the event yesterday? We didn't. We didn't talk about the Chromecast Ultra. Does anyone have a 4K television set at home?
No. I can't afford it after buying the phone.
Do young people buy? I mean, like, I visited people who are like 22. They don't even have TVs in their apartments. They just watch everything on their laptops or their tablet.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
I think at some point in time you age up into a television, but I could be wrong.
That's what they always said about newspapers is, when you get older, you'll buy newspapers. Wrong. My father always said, when you get older, you'll vote Republican. Wrong. I'm not sure that you will age up into a TV. But I don't know. I mean, my son does like having a big TV, and he casts up to it, but he also watches a heck of a lot of stuff on his laptop.
Yeah, my daughter actually prefers her tablet versus like an iPad as opposed to
it's a personal space.
I think it's that, and it's a lot faster and easier because like you've got to go. Maybe the set-top box rules will change all this, but for now it's kind of like open the television, it checks for the internet access, load the app loads. Okay.
Then also presume, Stacey, you're actually going to watch a whole thing where a whole thing might just be 2 minutes 30 now on YouTube. Right. And the pain of going into other stuff is just not worth it. Yeah.
Is this the PC all over again? PCs aren't dead, but they've diminished. TVs aren't dead. Are they diminishing? You know, I don't think.
No, they're getting bigger.
Indeed. I mean, as ownership numbers drop, I don't think they'll go away. There are more options in the market than there were 5-10 years ago. And so some people have replaced, some people have got both. And so I just think it's a rebalancing. And will that continue to shift? Yes. Will VR replace someone's TV? You can sit there and get a full movie experience. Right. Like you're
that
sitting
is
in a
like
theater.
The loneliest thing I can imagine.
Not if it's a room full of people with VR on in the same movie theater virtually.
Yeah.
But Stacey, with Daydream, you can lay in bed and use the controller to move the screen wherever you want it to be.
Yeah.
So this is not a selling point for me.
Place it on the ceiling. No big deal. It seemed like, I mean, obviously with the Chromecast, I think that was kind of the lightest of the announcements, obviously. And that's just really, if Chromecast is a product for the living room space, we have to have one that supports the latest, biggest technology. So we'll double the price, throw an Ethernet port on it, And there you go.
That was a good feature.
Yeah, for sure. Having the Ethernet port on there, I always kind of wanted to do that with my Chromecast. And apparently they have a way that you can do that with normal Chromecast too. So if that's the part of it that you liked, you can do that. There's an adapter for that, I suppose. So that is that. As part of this, Google has removed the 5X and the 6P from the Play Store, as well as some other hardware.
Bye-bye.
But basically... And, Hiroshi Lockheimer and others have confirmed this. The Nexus brand, as it were, is now, we can pour one out for Nexus, because apparently they have no more plans for any Nexus devices going forward. That's it. You can't even find them in the Play Store anymore.
I could create my own hardware product and call it Nexus and use the domain name.
Oh, yeah, no problem whatsoever. You'd have no problems.
The lawyers will give you no problem.
I don't know. Anyone super bummed about that kind of fact, especially because at least some of us have obsessed over the Nexus brand for years.
I think the fanboy in me is sad to see an end of an era.
Yeah.
I think the equal opportunist in me was hoping that maybe the Nexus brand would continue. We've got Android One, we've got Pixel, and there's this big gap in between. And we haven't really discussed the elephant in the room of the price of the phone, but... You know, deep down in my semi-socialist heart, I was hoping that there would be a more accessible device that would come with guaranteed security updates, so that everyone on Android, from Android One to this mid-class to the top tier, would have equal access to a safe and secure and updated operating system. But I knew that was a dream at the time, because that's confusing branding.
But Duncan, talk about that for a second. So if you're right, if you're Apple, you have... basically two phones. You know, you have one phone in different sizes. That's it. Is that what Google's going to do? Or does Google with Android One and other things need to have a range of phones? If Motorola was a range of different phones with different features, with neat stuff like things that, click on and all kinds of other things. Is in the long run, do we think that Google's going to need to have a range, or is it Apple like going to have one official phone?
Posed that exact question to one of the VPs at the one-on-one session yesterday. I don't want to attribute to anyone in particular, but basically when I asked the question, they said there's already great hardware on the market, for example, the OnePlus 3. We do monthly security updates and make that available at the first of every month, and, we work with our partners.
So they don't want to compete too much. They want to have a model and be Google, but they don't want to compete with Samsung and company too much.
I don't see it as competition. My question to them was actually, do you feel you have a moral imperative to ensure there is at least one safe and secure version of the phone for everyone at every price point? I even use the Be Together, Not the Same. Pixel has become an exclusive device, an inclusive operating system, which is a bit of an oxymoron. I could choose to afford a Pixel. I don't know if I will, but many people can't. And there's many people with phones that are stranded on, I don't care about the dessert version, as they called it. I care about the security updates. You know, if you're on 4.4, so what? As long as the phone is safe.
Right. Good point.
That's an awesome point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's
now I'm angry.
What you lose.
Now I'm angry that there's not a cheap budget,
Yeah, so I mean, you mentioned elephant in the room with the price. I will say that, shortly after the event concluded yesterday, filtering through comments of the many articles that were written about it, I posed a question on Twitter ahead of last night's All About Android to have people tell me what they thought of the announcement. And I mean, I don't know exactly how many, but I'd say the overwhelmingly majority opinion is that these phones are overpriced for what you get. So when you're talking about Google's kind of ambitions of, entering this world where their devices can stand toe-to-toe with some of the most premium devices out there, when there's this sensitivity to price point, I mean, did Google kind of do this to themselves based on its own history, or did it under-deliver on features? Did it misread how important the consumer would consider things like the assistant AI and build quality and stuff?
Time will tell. Is that the vocal minority, and will this phone sell just fine? There's two ways to make money. You make a little bit of money a lot of time, or you make a lot of money a little bit of time. You know, this just in, 50.38% of Ozdroid readers will not be getting a Pixel in any way, shape, or form.
Wow. And so, I would imagine that number would be far less if it were a lower price, if it were a Nexus device the way it has been for years.
All the comments are basically pricing, and last year it was something like 80% saying they want one or would get one. Mm-hmm. But this is people just categorically saying no. We've never seen that kind of result.
Wow. Jason, if you weren't the god of Android.
Please don't call me that.
He's not?
No.
Would King Android then? Would you feel compelled to buy the Pixel?
It's a really great question. Obviously, I get it because we do what we do and we play with all these devices, and it's, you know, it's part of what I do. Would I be compelled if I had the 6P going into this announcement? Would I be compelled to pony up for that device? I don't think that I would.
I might cancel. I mean, I know I go through this neurosis every single time with every single device. Sorry, folks, it's what I do. I ordered right away so I could make sure I had it in. But yeah, you know, so if I don't have it, how much am I going to grip my teeth? There'll be AI things I can't play with, which will bug me a lot. That's an issue. But again, I just sense that's not hardware dependent in any way. So we're getting gamed on that. The camera, it'd be nice to have a much better camera, but, you know, the 6P camera is a miracle itself. All of them are miracles. They're amazing.
Yeah.
I
mean, I feel like the real big challenge that Google has to kind of overdo right now is the past and is history. And not to mention is the fact that right now we are in the middle of kind of like a new era of mid-tier devices. This is the Huawei Honor 8 made entirely of glass front and back. Of course, because of that, I dropped it and it's cracked. But they have a great replacement policy. I'm so bad with this stuff.
When don't you drop phones?
Dude, it never used to be a thing. And now totally it is. I have the Note 7 here and I'm deathly afraid that I'm going to drop this thing and crack it. Anyways, my point being, for $400, you can get a lot of phone nowadays, and you're not making the same sacrifices you used to make. You know, the OnePlus 3 has a Snapdragon 820 processor, which up until a month ago was cutting edge processor. So it's still great. You know, 6 gigs of RAM, I believe, on the OnePlus 3. That's a $400 phone designed well, like fit, finished, all that kind of stuff. Really great phone for half the price of what you're getting here. So the challenge that Google has is kind of erasing or at least convincing people that it's okay to spend double what they would spend on this newly emerged mid-tier device that's super strong.
You're really right, Jason. The other issue is that Nougat is nice, but am I dying to have it versus Marshmallow? If I got a $400 phone that still had Marshmallow, that's not so bad.
And I think most of the $400 phones, if they are on Marshmallow, are going to have Nougat very soon. You know what I mean? They're all very current, modern. There's at least, you know, with Huawei and with OnePlus, like they still have an emphasis on making sure that they don't just release a device and then run away in the other direction, you know, and never update it whatsoever. It might not be as fast as Google, but their plan is to do that.
What,
for $400, maybe that's good enough.
Maybe what Google's done is actually create a vacuum. The problem with Samsung, who make fantastic devices, is they strand so many of their devices on older versions while they focus on their top tier ones, which means if you do get a mid-tier device, it probably won't get security updates, right? And they're not quite as good. Enter the OnePlus One, enter things like the Axon 7. If they can deliver constant security updates, even if it's not monthly, even if it's 3 monthly, I mean, and they keep that razor focus on just the one or two phones they're putting into market, that is an opportunity for someone to step up and go, hey, we're not Google, but this hardware is top tier, it's well priced, and we're going to keep it safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can fund me on Nexus at Kickstarter.
There's no denying it that if I had the 6P, it would be hard for me to convince myself that I had to have this phone, that it was like a no-brainer.
Uh-oh, now you're making me... So you wouldn't order it. Stacey, you're not ordering it. Duncan, are you kind of in the twit problem that you have to have it?
I am still waiting. In Australia, the phone I want would be $1,470.
Yeah.
That is a lot of money, even in our Australian money, which, by the way, makes more sense because it's different size and different colors, just saying. it's a, you know, how do I justify that? How do I justify that purchase? You know, do I justify it with a Pixel launcher that lets me do a couple of unique things with Google Photo storage of a resolution and quality I'll probably never access? The support is cool.
Yeah, 24/7 support. We didn't mention that. Gesture controls on the fingerprint sensor. Like, there's little things.
Yeah, I mean, there are things. Now, there is one thing that the Google hardware team said yesterday in the one-on-ones, and that's that this 24/7 support goes beyond just that screen in the settings app, that they are building in every launch market, at least the original launch markets, a logistics replacement network. So at the moment in Australia, if you break a Google phone, you get on the phone to Google and you put it in a box or do whatever. They're talking about walk-in opportunities. So they didn't say where those partners were, but think Samsung store more than a Google store. But the ability to actually get... They're getting logistic networks of all the spare parts into those countries, partners to actually do warranty repairs locally in that country. You know, that is a big deal. That is another thing that they're bringing to these markets. I questioned them on the financing deals, and 100% it's coming to other markets, just not anytime soon. But maybe next year, maybe the year after that. So this isn't just a phone for Google. This is a massive ecosystem play. And I think maybe those buying a Pixel this year are funding it.
Like a Kickstarter.
Sure feels like it, yeah.
You're kickstarting Google because they're broke.
Oh, yeah, Google is hurting right now. Needs your money and
it's
your
all
support.
It's all an island.
But possibly true, at least to a certain degree. Any final thoughts on this before we thank the final sponsor and get into our picks and stuff? Because apparently this episode is nothing but yesterday's event. But I think I'm okay with that, if you guys
are.
Yeah,
I think so too.
All right. Lots of fun, though. I've had a lot of fun spending the last 48 hours talking about Google's event.
Aren't you glad it's over now?
Now, over the course of the weekend, the fog will lift a little bit and I'll realize how I really feel. But before we kind of get into our tips and tricks and all that kind of stuff, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They are the sponsor of this episode. This is for all of you who maybe you've gotten a mortgage, got yourself a mortgage in the past and you know kind of the process to get there. Or if you haven't, you don't know what you're in store for. It's a lot of finding information, a lot of pulling information from different places to give them what they need in order to get that mortgage. And what is the end game? Getting into that house, you know, and that makes it so worth it, but it's not very fun getting there. It can be a challenge. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. They make it easy for you. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of securing a mortgage, applying for a mortgage, all that stuff's removed from the equation. So, you know, it's perfect for people who hate searching through stacks of old paperwork, through filing cabinets and all that kind of stuff to dig out just what you need. You don't need to do that here. They make it easy. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and your pay stubs at the touch of a button. That's going to help you get approved in minutes. For a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And beyond that, even better with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone. They make it really easy. Wherever you happen to be, you're sitting on the couch, you're relaxing, you're taking a train to work or whatever. Sure, I just signed up for a mortgage on the train to work. You can do that because you've got everything you need right here in your pocket on a phone. It's super quick and convenient. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, you're going to want to check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twig. That's quickenloans.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right. Let's see here. What do we have? I'll scroll down to the very bottom here and see. We do have a number down there. So, Jeff, I'll start with you. What's your number?
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
All right. So, I have to struggle for this one, I admit. But let me try to be counterintuitive, not for the first time.
Okay.
So, Pew survey says that 61% of millennials get their political news on Facebook and trigger the, oh, my God, they're all ignorant. This is horrible in the echo chamber. But, you know, compared to some percentage getting their political news on TV – I'm not so sure this is so bad. Get it on Facebook. No two people in the world see Facebook. It depends on how smart or stupid your friends are as to what you see. But I think that that is not necessarily a bad sign for the democracy. Now, they also said that 4 in 10, quote, consistent liberals say they have blocked or unfriended someone over political disagreements. Well, in this current race, I wouldn't say that's terribly surprising either. So I constantly hear this argument about how the internet is an echo chamber, and all you ever hear is what satisfies your informational cravings. Well, yeah, okay, but the fact that you see arguments all over means that you know there is another side. If you have stupid friends, you probably see stupid stuff. If you have smart friends, you probably see smart stuff. And if you have stupid friends, you probably weren't going to be interested anyway. So I just wanted to put in a word for saying that I think what we have to do in my world, in media, is make more things that are compatible with conversation so that people will pass it around and that has facts and has actual smart arguments inside those memes. And that is possible. So here, I was at an event last night. Nick Denton, founder of Gawker, of course, was interviewed by Kevin Delaney, the editor-in-chief of Quartz. Nick is a long, long old friend from ages back. And Delaney said to Denton something about how, well, you still believe, even after all this, you still believe the internet is going to improve things. And Nick said, yeah. And Kevin turned to the room and said, well, who else believes the internet is still going to improve things? Only Jay Rosen of NYU and I raised our hands. So I think there's a lot of pessimism going around, especially given the current climate, current political view. And I think we in media have messed things up, and we haven't shown enough empathy to people, and we're not understanding different communities' needs. But nonetheless, I'm still an optimist.
Excellent. I like to think I'm an optimist, too. I mean, 6 out of 10 millennials getting their political news on Facebook. At least, I don't know, maybe it's irresponsible to say, but at least they're getting it from somewhere, or at least they're trying to, you know, at least there's intention and there's attention.
And there are worse sources, Lord knows.
For sure, there are. At least there's intention, and this is one of those any political season, it's important for there to be intention and for people to feel like they have somewhat of an educated voice that's a little bit more than just, I don't know, that guy or that girl or whatever the case may be. So if that helps them get more educated and have a firm understanding of their belief, then I'm all for it. Sure, why not? Let's see here. Stacy, what about you? You got a recipe today or anything like that? Uh-oh, can't hear you.
There we go.
Oh, I'm back?
Yep.
Okay, I have a recipe if you want it. I'm not really keen on this recipe, I'll be honest. So I'd rather tell you something else because I am keen on it. So
tell us something else. Tell us what you're keen on.
Okay. Let me tell you what I'm keen on. So I've been working with Duolingo, which is I'm sure you guys all know this. This is a language learning app that is free. And if you don't know about it, you should if you want to learn a language, you should play because it's super fun and awesome. But they launched something called Tiny Cards. It's only for iOS right now, but they're basically flashcards to learn all kinds of crazy stuff. And I downloaded it on the iPad. And my daughter's using it to learn Chinese characters. She takes Mandarin. And they're fun. It's got the same sort of fun, easygoing stuff. It's free, so I wish it were on Android. I know that this is a This Week in Google show, so I'm really sorry.
Oh, no.
But it's great. I mean... I don't know how else to say it. I've been enjoying Duolingo, and now we downloaded this, and we've been having a great time. So if you like to learn things or like games that like you're sick of wasting your time playing, like, I don't know, what do people play now? Candy Crush? That was so old. Whatever you play now.
The Pokemons.
The Pokemons okay, and yeah. Going and stuff. Yeah.
The Pokemons and going. So if that gets old or whatnot, you know, check this out because I always think it's fun to learn stuff.
Nice. Excellent. And someday, I imagine, they'll bring it to Android.
And next week, when I'm home... Oh, I'm not going to be home. I really want to show you guys a light bulb in the flesh, but I'm not going to be home for the light bulb for a long time. So I'm really sad about this. Maybe I'll do a video because y'all are going to love this light bulb.
Light bulb in the glass.
Can't wait.
Yes, excellent. It's the most exciting thing ever.
Thank you, Stacy. So, Duncan... I realize we pulled you into the show last minute.
Thank you for doing this, Duncan.
Yeah, thank you, by the way. Fantastic insight.
Material.
For sure, for sure. You got a thing?
I do. So I had a quick look through my phone for my most used, most useful tools. And I ship devices all around the country, have packages coming and going, personal and both for Ausdroid. And I've always had troubles keeping track of them. You know, I'll have an app here, but then I won't have that device. And so I went searching, and what I found was Deliveries, which is a multi-device Android only for now package tracking app.
Cool. That, I don't know where the camera is set up. It's might be. I don't know if we're in.
Down
and yes and almost there we go.
This is like microscopic right surgery.
Here. I know it's there a little go. Weird. It's like backwards.
It's been a while since I've held a camera. So what it allows you to do is just to add in a delivery from most shippers. It's got most shippers around the world. So when I'm bringing things in from the States, from China, from England, from anywhere in Australia, it just lets you add them. But then this syncs up to the cloud, so you can get it just on a web interface, or you can get it across all your devices. And one of the things that I really love is you can actually just go in, touch, and it'll take you to a map. And so you can see exactly where it is, where it's gone. And so you can, you know, a lot of apps have this, but there's Writer's Chat. And I just find that's one of my most useful tools. So it's Deliveries on the Google Play Store. To get all of the features and customizations, it was a couple of dollars. But, you know, save yourself from drinking one of your horrible American coffees and give the money to an app developer. In fact, save yourself from drinking any coffee.
I don't know if I can do that.
I found a couple of good ones. Big shout out to Blue Bottle in San Francisco.
Blue Bottle's pretty good.
And the Turnaround, I think it was, which was just near there. It's just near where the trolley turns around.
This from a man from a country where they eat basically petroleum jelly that's like from the oil well, black goo on things. And consider on toast.
I was this close to bringing Jason some Vegemite, but...
yes, Daniel has brought me Vegemite in the past. He's also brought me Cadbury chocolates filled with Vegemite.
They were horrible.
They were not
even
good.
Even Australians didn't like
they
those.
They were not good.
No.
I think when I saw it, I was like, okay, maybe, I guess. But then when I tried it, it was like, no.
I think that's just trolling tourists.
I'm pretty sure, that was my indication that he doesn't like me very much.
You could give them out at Halloween to small children, and they would hate you. They'd be like, chocolate.
That's what you do. That's what you do.
Stacey, you have a devil streak in you.
I love it.
I'm a terrible person.
That's a great idea. Last year at Halloween, when we were done trick-or-treating, when we wanted to go out trick-or-treating, we left the rest of our candy out on the front doorstep. And then later, actually, one of our sponsors is Ring, full disclosure. But later realized that some kids had come along and dumped the whole thing of candy in their bag and ran off. And, of course, I had video of it. So maybe next time what I'll do is I'll put those Cadburys in there. They'll steal it, and I will have the last laugh.
The bad news is it was a chocolate so horrible it's no longer available.
So I should have kept it. It would be a collector's item. My tip is really quick. It could have been done on this show already before, but it's something that I've been using a lot lately just because it's so darn handy. And it's in Google Drive. It's in the Drive app. If you didn't know already, you can scan documents with Google Drive for Android. And I know, sometimes when I see that, when I first saw this, I was like, what's the difference between scanning a document and taking a picture of something? They're kind of the same, but a little bit different. So I'll go ahead and tap the plus, tap scan. It'll give me, once I give it permission, it'll give me my camera overlay. So there, let's say this is a business card. It's actually a frequent Zazzler's reward card for a restaurant. But see how it's all angled and everything. I'll go ahead and take a picture of that. And boom, it automatically crops it. It scans it to a PDF. You've got different color options. If you want it to just be black and white, you could do that. You could do color drawing, which is going to make it look a little bit more realistic if I can get that to go. But
can
anyways,
you scan it into a Google Sheets? Because that would be amazing for business cards.
Let's see here. I don't know if it goes
into Sheets. Or scan it into Contacts, either one.
So I'll go ahead and save it. There it is. Basically, it scans into a PDF and is stored on your Drive account, which, those other features would be nice too. But there you go.
I would pay for those other features. All right, come on, Google. Do something useful.
We've given them some ideas. Yeah, make something useful, why don't you, Google?
Yeah.
Jeez, for a change.
import
enough
the
of this
PDF
world's
into Keep.
Knowledge thing.
Use OCR.
that's nerdy. Bring that PDF into Keep, use OCR, and there you go. I wonder how well that would work. That's it for This Week in Google. Duncan Jaffrey, our last-minute guest from Ausdroid, senior associate at Ausdroid.net. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me on. I came to watch the show and got to be part of it, so that's pretty awesome.
I walk
yeah,
over.
Yeah, you were great, Duncan.
I'm like, so,
yeah, you got nothing
you
for
about
it.
This?
Not even candy. You left candy.
I'll give you a Tim Tam if you want one.
We've got Tim Tams at home.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, we have a bowl of candy out there. Maybe there's something in there that's unique.
Send him some Blue Bottle.
Maybe do they do an internet send sort of thing? Because I'm not at Blue Bottle right now.
No. I'm very displeased that Blue Apron isn't in Australia. In fact, to all Twit sponsors, all of you, please move to Australia. I want a Casper mattress. I would like a Ring video doorbell, easy to get without postage.
It's got to be a challenge living in Australia for that very reason. Not just in what you're talking about right now, but also just, I mean, products in general, like Google products, they do their releases. They don't necessarily release to everywhere.
There's lots of buying and shipping and reshipping and then having issues and reshipping back and warranties and... But hey, you do it because you love it.
That's right. That's right. Where can people follow your work online?
I think the best place to find me is on Ausdroid. So that's ausdroid.net. You'll find all of my writing there as well as all the rest of the team. We did a lot of coverage of Google's event. I've got just a few more videos to edit and put up, as well as a few more hands-on impressions of some of the other bits and pieces. But yeah, you can follow us there for the Australian perspective on all of the Android and the connected technology news.
Excellent. Duncan, thank you again.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Stacy, we didn't know if you were going to make it, but you flew in last
You're
minute.
So grateful
really appreciate
you did all
it.
This.
You didn't play any drums, which I'm a little sad about that, but we'll forgive you.
I can't believe my piano counted for nothing.
No,
nothing.
Your piano was
absolutely
pretty awesome. But we didn't hear any sort of like tense music to build up on certain topics. I don't know. I guess I expected a little more of your piano playing.
I don't actually play the piano, so I thought it was really good for someone who doesn't play the piano.
I never would have imagined.
Stacey, where do you want people to find all the stuff you're doing right now?
Oh my gosh. You can see me at GigaStacey on Twitter. You can find me at www.iotpodcast.com. And I have a column on PC Mag where this week, actually, I just did a thing on security. So how to make your smart home secure. And that column is called Get Smart with Stacey.
Excellent. Check it out. Thanks again, Stacey. It was a lot of fun doing a couple of these shows with you on coverage yesterday. Really appreciate it.
I'm going to miss you, Jason.
And I'm going to miss you. Until the next time Leo departs, and then I'll be here again. And I'm sorry about that.
Pick him out. Chase the locks.
Jeff, what about you? Always a pleasure doing a show with you. I don't know, buzzmachine.com? Are there other places to point people to?
No, I'm boring. That's it.
You're boring? I don't think that you're boring.
You just put up a bad word.
There's a bad word on that.
Oh, we went the whole episode without a bad word. That's okay. Buzzmachine.com and, find him on Twitter, of course, all over the map. You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell. Also all over, the network doing Tech News Today, doing all about Android App Arena. And, tomorrow I'm going to Oculus Connect. So I'll be doing a Twit special there.
Ooh.
I'm going to go check out a bunch of VR stuff. Really looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. That coverage is going to be at twit.tv/specials. But that's it for this week. Really appreciate you joining us for This Week in Google. Of course, Leo Laporte will be back next week with the both of you. So it'll be back to the normal, regularly scheduled program, recording live every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, 20 p.m. UTC, 2000. Is that what he normally says? I don't know what it is. 2000 UTC. And you can find, of course, all the information on this show at twit.tv/twig. That is it for this week. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye, everybody.